WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
Most people think of brand names as living outside the English language, not as real words. But as our linguist Jeff Nunberg observes, nowadays, those names make up a big proportion of the average person's vocabulary. As he puts it, the English language is being privatized.
Not long ago, a French branding consultant announced that he'd done a study that showed that brand names account for 2 out of 5 words that the average person knows. I'm a little dubious about that result. It puts me in mind of the well-known fact that 57% of all quoted statistics are made up on the spot. But the estimate's probably in the right range. I figure I know 20 or 30 common nouns for kinds of automobiles, convertible, sedan, SUV, hardtop, and so forth. But I know several hundred names of car makes and models. And the proportions are similar for breakfast cereals, soft drinks, and shampoos. Of course, the vast majority of those trademarks live in the noun region of my mental dictionary. The neighborhoods inhabited by verbs, adjectives, and prepositions are relatively uncluttered by commercial messages. But the Patent and Trademark Office lists over 4 million terms that somebody's tried to trademark at one time or another, and the list is growing by about 100,000 a year. Even if only a fraction of those wind up settling in your brain, they make for a big constituency. Think of the English language as a vast territory of words and syllables, what the linguist Jeffrey Pullum calls the phonetosphere. Most of that space has been staked out by private interests now, some of them small homesteaders, and some of them great brand barons with thousands of names under their control. It's a territory torn by border wars, particularly as companies extend their brand names into new areas of business where they may brush up against the similar-sounding brands of competitors. Nowadays, more than 80% of new product names are the extensions of established brands. All of a sudden, a computer company and a music publisher can be at odds over who has the right to use Apple for a music download service. And at the center of it all is this patch of free range that we think of as the common language, where words aren't accountable to anybody at all. The branding people have a complicated relationship to that common language. They're always abducting its inhabitants to serve a single master as a brand or slogan, but they also have an interest in maintaining its neutrality, like a linguistic Switzerland. That isn't just because they need the verbs and prepositions that flourish there, but because they need all those generic phrases like bathroom tissue and plastic wrap to keep their trademarks from becoming common nouns that anybody could use. Whatever you or I may think, in the minds of trademark attorneys, all brand names are really secret adjectives. Not Oreos, but Oreo brand sandwich cookies. Not Skippy, but Skippy brand peanut butter spread. But trademark holders live in fear of seeing their own brands cross the border and cast off their capital letters. Over the years, that's been the fate of a lot of trademark names. Pogo stick, heroin, cellophane, dry ice, leatherette, jungle gym, and zipper. And there are dozens of other trademarks that are clinging to legal life by a thread. Mary Jane's and loafers, Ouija board and pegboard, Tabasco sauce and minibar, skivvies and sheetrock, windbreakers and seeing-eye dogs, dumpsters and dobros. Not a lot of people write those words with capital letters, but every one of them still legally entitled to the honor. Dictionaries are supposed to be the guardians of the common language, but they're reluctant to naturalize any of those asylum seekers from brand space. They can ignore the objections of pressure groups when it comes to listing obscenities or ethnic slurs. And they have no compunction about including slang terms or malapropisms that set the teeth of the language police on edge. But crossing your own legal department takes a different kind of moxie, another former brand name, by the way. When it comes to defining words that are still trademarked, lexicographers suddenly discover the virtues of discretion. Look up the verb Xerox in Merriam-Webster's, for example, and you'll see an entry that says, to make a copy on a Xerox copier. As in, did you Xerox the documents? No, but Iconica'd some and Toshiba'd the rest. It's a definition that clearly had its origin on legal stationery, not in anybody's actual use of the verb. Some people find that profusion of brand names alarming. You could have the impression that we're privatizing the language in the same way we're privatizing the national forests. But as the Frenchman who did that study points out, it has a useful side effect. The great brands don't belong to any single language. They're part of a new global tongue, the Esperanto of the checkout stand. You may not know how to say soft drink or athletic shoe in Italian, but nowadays you can always get by in Rome by asking for Coca-Cola or Nikes. From the international point of view, those are the real common nouns. We're all drawn together under the international lingua branda, with only our separate verbs to keep us apart.
Jeff Nunberg is a Stanford linguist and the author of Going Nuclear: Language, Politics, and Culture in Confrontational Times.